It's time for justice. Welcome to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 97.3 FM WRIR and at www.wrir.org. I'm your host, Marty Wegbright. This show is written and produced by Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We give free, civil, non-criminal legal aid to low-income people in Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, and surrounding cities and counties. Coming up on this week's show...
And this is what people refer to as underwriting. Underwriting is what's done with any legitimate loan. But these are not legitimate loans. None of these predatory lenders underwrite. And in fact, a few days after these regs came out, on a blog that done by bank lawyers, they said this will kill the entire bank petty loan product, which of course it will. And if we get the same regs with payday and car title loans, that's the end of their business because they will not do underwriting.
Jay Spear, executive director of the Virginia Poverty Law Center, explains new developments in consumer protection law. And during this week's News You Can Use, we'll tell you about how poverty-fighting efforts actually are doing their job in keeping people out of poverty. All that and more coming up. Stay with us. The show is supported in part by a grant from the Virginia Law Foundation. This show, number 207, is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society and gives only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford an attorney, we'll tell you later in the show how to get free legal advice or representation in a civil case. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show is heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, and online at www.wrir.org, and is made possible by community radio volunteers at WRIR. And now, this week's News You Can Use. Tax credits for working families and other poverty-fighting efforts like nutrition assistance are highly effective in keeping families afloat during tough financial times and in preventing poverty from being even worse than it is. That's one of the key findings of a new report by the Weldon Cooper Center at the University of Virginia, which provides a more accurate picture of how many and which families in Virginia are struggling to make ends meet. This new measurement takes into account differences in the cost of living across Virginia and a fuller array of a family's expenses, including medical costs, child care, and transportation expenses for working poor families, and counts additional resources, such as food stamps, that are not counted in the official poverty measure used by the federal government. Based on Weldon Cooper's new measure, tax credits for working families, such as the Earned Income Tax Credit and refunds received through the Child Tax Credit, do the most to reduce poverty. These credits keep almost 150,000 Virginians out of poverty, reducing the state's poverty rate by 17%. They also cut Virginia's child poverty rate by a whopping 33%. The credits boost individual and household income, which has long-lasting effects. For instance, prior studies have found that the Earned Income Tax Credit not only increases employment and earnings among low-income working-age women, but also improves the health, school performance, and future adult earnings of young children in families that receive the credit. Among non-tax poverty-fighting efforts, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, formerly known as food stamps, has the biggest impact, keeping over 100,000 Virginians above the poverty line. These new numbers are particularly important as Congress considers allowing SNAP benefits to fall. If Congress doesn't fix the problem, on November 1st, the average SNAP benefit will be reduced to only about $1.40 per person per meal. This cut will harm over 900,000 Virginians and remove $64 million from Virginia's economy. Too many working and retired families in Virginia don't bring home enough in wages or Social Security income to stay out of poverty. As the new report shows, key tax breaks and services help bridge the gap between a family's earned income and how much they need to pay the bills. For more information, go to www.thehalfsheet.org. With this week's News You Can Use, this is your host, Marty Wegbright. The creation of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau has sparked a new interest in consumer protection law. Jay Spear, Executive Director of the Virginia Poverty Law Center, explained new developments in consumer protection law to a recent meeting of Virginia Legal Aid attorneys, and the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show was there. Here are Jay's remarks.
Once again, we tried to change the foreclosure laws, and once again, we were slapped down on that. This is like the third or fourth year in a row. I don't think anybody's going to do it again next year. I'd be surprised. It always passes the Senate easily and gets killed over in the House. You have to admit, though, it is somewhat amusing to hear the bankers stand up and say why it's okay for somebody to use fraudulent documents to foreclose on you. So what's going on with loan sharking in Virginia right now? There's actually sort of four main types of predatory loans you can get in Virginia right now. There's the car title loans, which are now regulated by statute. Payday loans, which were also regulated by statute, you have to have a license in order to screw somebody with one of these loans. And then we have the open-end line of credit loans, which is a wholly unregulated area, and we keep trying to get them to regulate it, but it doesn't work. And as a matter of fact, I just found out that the Attorney General's office today announced that they sued one of these open-end line of credit lenders. The only thing that the Virginia law requires is that you give somebody a 25-day grace period, and yet they can't even do that. And so they sued this place out in Henrico, Advanced LLC, doing business as Advanced Till Payday. But they were charging a 15% upfront fee. And then we have the internet loans, which are all illegal in Virginia, and a lot of our clients are probably now starting to get these. We certainly hear about a lot of internet loans. If it meets the definition of a payday loan, it's a class 6 felony to offer such a loan in Virginia without a license. A lot of them claim to be open-end loans, but they really aren't. One of the big ones is CashNet USA. CashNet USA charges an upfront fee within the 25-day grace period, and so they're doing exactly what the Attorney General's office just sued this other company for. Okay? But does the Attorney General's office sue any of these companies? No. And I'll talk a little bit about that later. So, I want to talk a little bit about the proposed regulations by the OCC and the FDIC. The OCC is the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency, and the FDIC, of course, is the Federal Deposit Insurance. These are the folks, the federal regulators that regulate the national and the state banks. And they have got these proposed regulations out there. The regulations have to do with bank payday lending. And bank payday lending is some of the banks now, and I think there's about three or four big banks nationally, they do a loan against your advance. If you're getting your Social Security deposited or your paycheck or whatever, and you don't have enough money, they'll give you a very short-term loan to make it until your next check is deposited, and then they take all their interest and their principal back out of your next paycheck or your next Social Security check. Now, they're not doing this in Virginia right now. So you may ask, why are these important? Well, it's because of what it says in the regs. One big thing is that the CFPB, which is the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, has put out a white paper about 2 days before the OCC and the FDIC put out their regs, and they indicate they're contemplating the same regulations for all payday and car title lending in the United States. And unless the Congress gets rid of the CFPB, which, of course, a lot of senators are in particular are trying to get rid of them, they do have the authority to make regulations over payday and car title lenders. And so a lot of people have been looking for clues about whether they're going to do this. They put out this long thing. And I'll tell you, if you read that, you would think it came from the same agency. Clearly, the folks at OCC, FDIC, and CFPB have all been discussing this. They're not going to tell you that. But it's pretty clear that they've all been talking about this and how to deal with this. So what's so great about these regs? Well, all they are requiring of the banks is to do underwriting. There's no interest rate cap. There's no cooling off period and all these things that we always talk about when we try to regulate these industries. And what it says is the banks must ensure that the borrowers can repay the loan according to the loan's terms without refinancing or borrowing from others while meeting ordinary and necessary expenses. And this is what people refer to as underwriting. Underwriting is what's done with any legitimate loan. But these are not legitimate loans. None of these predatory lenders underwrite. And in fact, a few days after these regs came out, on a blog that's done by bank lawyers, they said this will kill the entire bank petty loan product, which of course it will. And if we get the same regs with payday and car title loans, that's the end of their business because they will not do underwriting. I mean, you can imagine, do you think there's an underwriter at Check Into Cash? I don't think so. Cash in 15 minutes, right, and you know, see, the underwriter doesn't even have time to eat lunch or anything. So another thing that's going on with predatory lending is we recently got Chesterfield County, which is a county south of here, big county, did an ordinance on what they call alternative lending. And what was going on in Chesterfield is they were not letting any payday and car title lenders open up there. Their planning commission just didn't like it. And so when somebody applied to open a business, they just said no. And so finally, one of the car title lenders said, well, you can't just say no. You have to actually have a law or a regulation that keeps us out. They passed this ordinance, and there are several things in there which are very helpful. It requires a one-mile separation between these businesses. So what that means is you put a payday loan store here, you draw a one-mile circle around there, you can't have any other car title lender, open-end lender, or anything around it. They're banned from locating next to residential property or in five areas that they designated for revitalization in Chesterfield. It prohibits more than one type of financial lender from operating under the same roof, which is actually more restrictive than the state regulation, because we have a lot of car title lenders that also do open-end loans. But you wouldn't be able to do that in Chesterfield County. And the key to getting this ordinance approved was all about land values and how when you have signs all over the place that say cash, 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 it leads to crime. And in fact, one of the board of supervisors, when they were announcing that they supported the ordinance, talked about how he had read several studies about how these places led to more increased crime in the area. It was all about property values, which is the proper discussion for a local county or city to have about what businesses should or should not be in their jurisdiction. So we heard that a lot of counties were following this, looking at what Chesterfield was going to do and maybe doing the same thing. It's fun to do these because the lobbyists can't get out to all these cities and counties. And so when you have these county boards of supervisors and town council people talk about these issues who haven't been lobbied by the industry, they're all like, you know, what the hell? This is ridiculous. 500% interest? We're not going to allow this. Moving on to another subject, the foreclosure fraud settlements. There's actually been three, but I'm going to talk about two. Two settlements where your clients might be getting checks in the mail and they might be calling you about why are they getting this check or whatever. And I have a quote in here. The big banks are being forced to make pathetically small payments to former homeowners in two different settlements. That's actually my quote. There's sort of two main settlements. There's last year's state attorney general settlement where all the attorney generals, 49 of the attorney generals, Oklahoma wouldn't get in on it, sued the big banks. And there was that $26 billion settlement you probably heard about last year. Now we're finally getting around to that point where they're going to start sending checks to people who were wrongfully foreclosed upon. And I understand the average check, they keep telling me different things, but I think the average check's going to be around $1,500. And there's a lot of people in Virginia who's going to get this, 40-some thousand or 30,000 or something like that. It's a lot of people that are going to get these checks. Now, there's also the independent foreclosure review settlement. This is where the OCC and the Fed were, for a while, they were forcing the big banks to review their foreclosures. And so they would go through documents, find out where they had wrongfully foreclosed on people. And you may have heard about this. And then a few months ago, they just said, they threw up their hands and said, we can't figure it out. We're just going to make you pay $9 billion. And they came up with this totally insane system of figuring out how they would pay. So anyway, people have already started getting checks from that. And some people will get payments from both settlements. Both the checks are going to come from this company called Rust Consulting, who is the company who's hired to figure out who gets the checks and send them out. So that's going to be confusing. It says on the checks, apparently, cashing or depositing this check may affect your taxes or public assistance benefits. Neither the agent nor the American advisory. So you might be you might run into that question. Does this affect my public benefits? And it might. And for some people, it's going to end up, not only is it a pathetically small payment, but it isn't going to help them because it's going to mess up their, they're going to end up losing their SSI for a month or something. So I think you're looking at right around $1,000 on each one of them. So, yeah, as I say, pathetically small. It's funny, you know, some people getting the checks weren't even really wrongfully foreclosed on. They just got behind in pay. And then other people were just totally screwed. And if you're totally screwed, what good is $1,000 going to do to you lost your house? But so it's all very strange.
You've been listening to Jay Spear, Executive Director of the Virginia Poverty Law Center, explaining new developments in consumer protection law to a recent meeting of Virginia legal aid attorneys. We'll be back in a moment. We continue now with the remarks of Jay Spear, Executive Director of the Virginia Poverty Law Center, at a recent meeting of Virginia legal aid attorneys explaining new developments in consumer protection law.
I understand our Attorney General's office was responsible for finding folks for that first settlement, the Attorney General's settlement. They apparently went to a lot of, as they were told me, they went to a lot of trouble to find people, went to DMV and all sorts of stuff like that. And I think I was surprised that they had like a 60-some percent response rate, which I was very surprised at that. All right, so will these foreclosure fraud settlements hurt the banks? Well, apparently not, because bank profits in the first quarter of this year were the highest on record. As I understand it, mainly due to bank fees. Somebody always wins, right, no matter what. All right, debt collection. I don't know if you can read this, but this guy's reading a letter he got. It says, if you have already sent us your payment, please accept our apology for the death threat and warm wishes for the holiday season. And our clients sure get a lot of death threats. The U.S. Treasury Department issued proposed guidelines for nonprofit hospitals on debt collection. This was actually last summer. And this is thanks again to the Affordable Care Act. Can we get a round of applause for the Affordable Care Act? Nonprofit hospitals are a little more than half of all the hospitals in the country, yet they have to establish a financial assistance policy that clearly describes criteria for receiving assistance. You have to give patients a four-month grace period to seek assistance before they turn it over to a debt collection agency. So there's some good regulations here for people. So if you get somebody being sued for a hospital bill, and if it's a nonprofit hospital, you might want to look at these regs. All right, debt buyers. For those of you that don't know what debt buyers are, there's the FTC did a report in January on the debt buying industry. And what these are companies that buy bad debt. So if Capital One has debt that they can't collect on, they sell it on the market. It's a multi-billion-dollar market. It's a huge market. And what this FTC report tells you about the industry is sick. The companies that buy the old debt, they buy it on the average for 4 cents on the dollar. So anyways, they have very little in the game, right? The debt buyers are not told if the debt has been disputed. So if you had a debt with Capital One and you keep telling them it's not your debt, it's your dad's bill, or they got the wrong person, they sell it to Midland, who is a debt buyer, and then Midland comes after you, and they're not even told that you've been disputing it. According to the FTC report, the sellers make no guarantee about the accuracy of the information the debt buyers. What the debt buyers are buying is data, and it's people's names and amounts that they owe, and that's pretty much it. As I say, the sellers often don't have documents to back up the claim, or they had charged the buyer more if they want the documents. Lori Swanson, who is the Minnesota Attorney General and really one of the heroes right now of the consumer movement, she reached a settlement with the big debt buyers of one of them. I think it's like an $85 million settlement in Minnesota. There's this case that was decided in Chesapeake General District Court. It's called Asset Acceptance, who is a debt buyer. They sue a lot of people in Virginia. Asset Acceptance versus Woolard. So what happened here was that this man was sued by Asset Acceptance, who had bought the debt from Navy Federal Credit Union. And they then tried to collect on the debt. And this is actually, the like most cases in Virginia where you get sued for a debt, the defendant never showed up. And what I am hearing from all around the state is that general district court judges, nonetheless, are sick of this stuff. They don't like that they're sick of the debt buyers bringing all these cases, and they never seem to have the documents to back it up and that sort of thing. The judge ended up refusing to give a default judgment. They came into court with an affidavit, Asset Acceptance did. It was somebody employed by Asset Acceptance trying to say that they knew that this debt was owed. And then the judge made them produce more documents, and they found, when you look through like the Excel spreadsheets or something, they had a previous balance, $12,379. New balance, $12,379. Past due amount, $1,995. So the judge said, what the hell's going on here? $2,000 to $12,000, and you got nothing to show why. Now, this is really pretty typical of credit card cases. They just lay on the fees, and then they want to just go into court and say, we say you owe it, so how could you dispute it? Well, the judge was having none of this and wrote a very long opinion saying why he was not going to give a default judgment, and he discusses these code sections. If you have a case with a debt buyer, you really ought to read this case. They thought they could just bring in an affidavit from any old person. I'm surprised they didn't just get an affidavit signed from somebody at the coffee shop across the street or something. It's just as good. But it's a really good opinion. I understand that there's no debt buying lawsuits being brought in Chesapeake General District Court right now because of this. And so this is, you know, it's going to be interesting what happens with this. I know this is on appeal, though. Now, frozen bank accounts. I thought this issue was resolved 2 years ago when Treasury and other federal agencies adopted final interim rules regarding the garnishment of bank accounts. And the rule basically is that when somebody's bank account is garnished, the bank has to look at the account, and if you're having directly deposited exempt benefits like Social Security, for example, you get $500 a month, they have to give you access to $1,000, kind of a simple rule. And for those of you that haven't been around legal aid for a while, you don't know, we've been fighting this issue for years and years and years. And so this rule was just a godsend because we had lots and lots of these cases. That's basically what the rule is. And these final interim rules were 2 years ago, and they actually in May just did the final garnishment rule, not really changing much from the interim rule except they clarify the definition of a garnishment order that includes the orders of levies issued by a state or a state agency or a municipality. So the definition of a garnishment or a garnishment order is pretty broad, and it does, in fact, include these notices of liens that some of these debt collection attorneys have been trying to get around with. We found that now, just recently, that there are some banks are still freezing accounts, BB&T. They claim it doesn't apply to notices of liens, which is ridiculous. It clearly does apply to that. If this happens, and a national bank is a small bank out in the western part of the state, I heard they're doing it as well. Banks hate media exposure about taking widows' money and stuff like that. In fact, you know, one of these people, I talked with both of these people at BB&T. One lady, this happened to her account in Danville. She had already moved to North Carolina. They froze her account. She didn't get to legal aid until like 3 weeks later. Meanwhile, she couldn't pay her rent in Greensboro, North Carolina. She lost her house. She got evicted. So thank you very much, BB&T, right? If this happens, you should file complaints with the CFPB. This is within their jurisdiction. And I really encourage people to file complaints with the CFPB. It's really easy. Do it for your client. Don't ask your client to do it. They won't do it. It'll take you 5 minutes. The CFPB, you know, sometimes resolves complaints, and even if they don't resolve them, apparently the director reads through the complaints. Richard Cordray says he reads through these complaints on a regular basis, so they pay attention.
You've been listening to Jay Spear, Executive Director of the Virginia Poverty Law Center, explaining new developments in consumer protection law to a recent meeting of Virginia legal aid attorneys. This is the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. That's all for this week's Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. This show is heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. To see if you can get free civil legal aid, call during intake hours. These are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. The phone number is 200-6046 for intake, 648-1012 for the main number, and 1-800-868-1012 to call toll-free. If you have any comments on the show, you can email them to marty@cvlas.org. In addition, every first-run Central Virginia Legal Aid radio show ever broadcast is available at www.radioforall.net. That's radio, the numeral 4, all.net. Then click the contributor link, then click Marty Wegbright, Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. This show provides only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford one, call Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. The creation of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau has sparked a new interest in consumer protection law. Join us next Wednesday at 12:30 p.m. when Jay Spear, Executive Director of the Virginia Poverty Law Center, continues his explanation of new developments in consumer protection law. That's law for the rest of us next week on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Marty Wegbright.